This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
If you've tuned into Enterprise Biz Bikes, you may have already heard from our guest today. I'm Frida Liu, and I'm speaking to Jaya Das, Managing Director of Randstad Singapore and Malaysia. Usually, she's sharing insights about the workforce through Randstad's research as a global player in talent solutions. And today, she's here to talk about Randstad's growth journey in Southeast Asia and their tech and touch strategy. Welcome, Jaya. Did I pronounce Randstad correctly?
Yes,
you know, somehow, you know, like when look at it this way, and then the Dutch will say no, but it's pronounced a completely different way. So yes, it is a Dutch company that has been around for more than 55 years, coming to Malaysia now 24 years, and its iteration here in Malaysia is slightly different compared to the European offices, right? You were saying that in Europe it's more about staffing, but here professional recruitment specifically, and I guess, like, you know, coming to this part of the world, why that strategy?
I think for a company who's as old as us, we'll be celebrating our 60th birthday this year in
September. Okay.
So we officially turned 60 this year.
So 55 is too young already.
Okay. Yeah, well, so the getting into the next decade already. So I think when you look at a company, you will see almost every life cycle stage happen as you go through different decades. Mm. If you look at how we started, being a Dutch-based company in Europe, it's very much still known as a staffing player. And that side of the world, that's what we're known for. That's our core strength and the markets we play in. But like all large-sized conglomerates, we are number one globally as the number one HR services provider. You will have a multiple portfolio. So over the years, we've made multiple acquisitions, different lines of business. In Asia-Pacific, when you actually look at the economic climate and you look at how people consume, work takes a very different structure. Most Asians are in permanent employment for most of their life. They don't take on contract roles. I think our lifestyle options, where us buying, say, getting into a mortgage for a lifetime, decisions like that decide what the workforce looks like. Mm. If you look at it in Europe, people live on a contingent basis. People stay on rent, you know, they give up on their property, they move countries, they move states and so on. So if you look at what role we then want to play in the workforce here, the idea is to help people find permanent employment. Mm. And therefore, the solution is then to work with companies to help them find the best talent in the market.
Right.
So our portfolio in Asia Pacific, it's a combination of what I call headhunting, where you go out after specific people for a role, or you do the mid to senior level professionals, where basically you have market expertise in an area. That could be function specific or it could be industry specific. And as a result, what happens when a client comes to us and says, I want to hire the best brand manager there is in the food services industry, we are then able to articulate very clearly what that solution looks like. Mm. What is the size of market? What sort of candidates are you looking at? What's the skill set, the strength, the various levels? But you have to have depth and knowledge in it. So it's not about getting a person in a job. It's about getting the person into the job.
Right. So you have been with the organizations for 12 years as well. And very interesting, you talk about the kind of psychographics of the you know, in the West and also here. Do you see that changing here, though?
I think certainly innovation in technology.
The gig economy.
Yeah, the gig economy. That's one piece. But the second issue is basically technology has helped you close the gap of what proximity used to hold you back on before. So you see a lot more remote working. Mm. I think you see the concept of people being excited about moving globally. And so as a result, you get this talent migration. So concepts are starting to fuse a lot. So I think Asia is developing from a maturity perspective on options in life. So a lot of the phases or the transitions that the Western economies have gone through are hitting us as well. Mm. So if you look at the younger generation, for example, the idea of being able to balance both your work life and your personal life is very, very critical for them. So you see more younger people taking sabbatical between jobs, going away and achieving and fulfilling their dreams. When a decade ago, this is unheard of.
Yes. You got to save up for that house.
Absolutely.
What are you talking about?
And if you turn up with a CV trying to explain it to your employer and said, look, I had a 6-month break to go and build a house in Haiti.
Nonsense.
Somebody's going to look at you and said, why did you do that? What happened at work? Did you quarrel with your boss? Were you, you know, fired? Did you steal something? All these questions start to come up. But in the Western world, it's great. Tell me about that experience. How have you grown? Have you learned? You know, what did you take out of it? The mindset is shifting.
Okay.
So I do see the fusing of concepts.
Right.
But as I said, economically, it takes much longer, decades, to shift a society.
Right.
So have we evolved as much as the Western economy has? Not quite.
Not quite.
But we're on our way.
Okay. Yeah. In the 12 years that you've been with the company, though, what do you see in terms of hiring trends? What do you see having changed?
I think this is the first time the workforce is in such a conundrum on having to deal with a variety of people at work. Variety both from an age category perspective. I think you have five generations in the workforce in a lot of the organizations. And then the second one is that there's no longer a policy making process of one size fits all. So to complicate matters even more, every organization is operating in what they call the VUCA world, right? It's completely volatile and it changes. So this need to balance between innovation and creativity and risk of keeping your business or the wheels on the bus makes people start to feel that you really need to flex on your policy and your trends. So the first change that I've seen happen drastically in the last 5 years is how much of a contingent workforce there is. Mm. Companies are starting to hire employees permanently on a contract. If that makes sense.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. So what they do is they put you on a 1 year contract and then they continuously renew it permanently year after year after year.
Yeah.
This goes for a more transparent conversation between the employee and yourself on what the outcome and the expectations of the role are, including compensation, because then you don't depreciate a person's income over a lifetime, which used to be the case when you look at our grandparents and how they're in employment.
Right.
You're with one employer and your income is annualized, you know, over a lifetime sort of thing. And it changes the conversation drastically. But these days, people look at an outcome. It's project driven. It's success driven and said, okay, so you need to get this done by when and what role do I play in it? And when we finish that, let's then discuss whether we still want to stay together.
Right.
And so it becomes a very different conversation on how you approach talent.
Right. And the kind of clients that you have, would it be largely the multinationals? Do you see a lot of SMEs coming on board using your services? In what industries and what kind of skills, I guess?
It's a mixed bag. I think the end story is who are we best at serving at the market. If you look at MNC organizations, I think, first of all, their own brand allows them to acquire talent to a certain level. So if you're talking about not easy to fill positions, but generic roles, they are in a very good position to attract talent by themselves. They come to us when they have a very niche requirement and they have specific positions that they can't fill, or they are dealing with project recruitment. So sometimes you have somebody starting up and needing to hire 1,000 staff in the span of 2 years. Doing it by yourself is daunting. So that's when they'll come to agency partnership to do it. The second one is when they have a very specific idea of who needs to execute the role. So digital transformation, change management, niche functions and compensation and benefits, tax, treasury, and I can go on for a laundry list of these roles. You don't advertise for these positions and attract people. This is us going out and specifically mapping the market to see who's out there, right. What skill sets do they have, at what price point, and who would be the right person fit for the role. At that level, the skills are a given. You don't need to prove that you have a degree to do the job. But it's more about, are you able to solve this organization's problems? And is it a happy marriage of what you expect out of your job and versus what the employer is offering? So that's when we come into the picture. And the role that we play in that situation is that we are the indifferent party. We are not trying to serve either party's interests, except we are brokering the deal, if you like. So in that context, I think that's the talent or the capability we bring to MNCs, specialist industry knowledge. If you look at the middle players, the SME organizations, these days that categorization of what an SME is very broad. You have a lot of startups, you have a lot of organizations who are in Series B, Series C funding sort of scenarios. And these guys find it very hard to go to market and broadcast what they do, advertise, or be able to sell a value proposition to a potential employee. So they use agencies like us because we have the supply of talent. Everyday candidates come to us either for a specific role or just to say, help me identify the next best opportunity for me. So we are then in a position to advertise the company or the proposition that they want for their talent. So I think to some extent in that setup, we are more badly wanted or needed. So it's a mixed bag. It also depends on the industry you function in. If you look at technology, you see more and more smaller players coming up in the picture. So our value proposition is a lot more extended in that area.
Right.
If you are dealing in the more traditional field, say, for example, maybe law firms, you tend to play with the bigger boys. Yeah. So I think it's there isn't one size fits all in this scenario.
What about, you know, the fact that we were talking a lot more about diversity and inclusion? Is it something that clients recommend or something that you actually, you know, advise them? Or is it just, you know, meritocracy?
Diversity and inclusion is a very fashionable word that a lot of people like to use and say that we have diversity. But the concept of diversity isn't actually whether you are representing every gender, every race, and every age category. The concept of diversity is to understand whether you can solve a talent problem through a different way. So most people, when they write a job description or they identify a person, they have a fixed bag mindset of who could do the job.
Mm.
And sometimes it's based on who already exists in the department, what the bosses are like, what the team is like, and what the culture is like. And that's critical because this person has to fit in. But more importantly, what additional qualities or what additional upsides could you have if you change the profile of the type of person who could do the job? Now, this is where we come in. Our job is to educate you all the options that you have and what diversity could bring to that role.
Okay.
And that's when clients start to look at it differently and say, great, explain it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So diversity, not so much in gender and race, but it's like you already have an idea. What is, maybe you want to change it around, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
A different perspective. Interesting. I'm here with Jayadas from Randstad talking about the industry, this whole industry on employment. I will continue a conversation after this. BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. I'm speaking to Jayadas, Managing Director, Randstad Singapore and Malaysia. She's visiting and we're having a chat about insights on workforce and what's happening here in this part of the world. What industries do you see coming more into Randstad's focus with IR 4.0 and 5G on their way? What's happening?
The technology world, I think, is scaring the best of us at the moment, simply put. I think it's a mixed bag of being excited about what's to come and then people feeling a sense of not being able to cope with the change and a threat to our security and existence and all these questions about what does the change mean in technology. I think there is a lot of, I would say, a younger population that is coming out based on what is on offer as a result of this technology advancement to allow people to create a future. If you look at the average person these days, we all want to achieve something at the press of a button, right? Mm. We want to be able to swipe and get to the end outcome. So actually what's driving it is consumer trend. Our expectations is that we don't want to stand in queue in line. We want to take every shortcut and we want to actually experience the world from our seat. So if that is the case, there is a copious demand from the public for services that can be enabled through technology in every shape, size and form. So every element of your life needs to be digitized, if you like. So if you start to think about it in this way, all this terminology that you have, whether it's the digital economy, whether it's the gig economy, whether it's the 4IR, this will keep evolving as time goes. It's always going to be a situation where your ambition and your vision is ahead of what you've achieved.
Right.
So while you are making up the new thing, something's changed. And so it's this evolution.
So what sort of industry you see falling behind?
I think at one point, and this is quickly changing, it's the retail industry, the brick and mortar concept of having a physical presence to move your product. I still think that this is very much in the change where one day you are not going to see shopping malls and shopping malls and shopping malls. People are going to shop in a completely different way. And that transition's already happened. The average person is comparing an online purchase to something that's physical. I think this is the first piece that would change dramatically. Other industries which I think are struggling still are service-based industries. So if you look at the F&B world, if you look at healthcare and you look at anything that requires people to deliver the services, it is still a situation where digitization is a problem, right? If you look at industries like manufacturing or any of the heavy industries, all of them are automating. So anything that you can sort of almost reduce the variety from human interaction, you have an easier time digitizing and automating.
Right.
You hear of hotels where you are checked in by a robot and escorted to a room by a robot and so on and so forth. Conceptually, this is jarring for people when we're still used to dealing with people.
Right.
So those industries, I think, still struggle to automate. And it does.
Although some hotel staff behave like they're robots. Okay. If you look at your, there were 50 staff members here in Malaysia and Singapore. Do you see a marked difference in the industry focus, though, for Singapore and Malaysia?
Yes, I think it's a very different economy. I think culturally the expectation of employers and what they offer back to their employees is a very different value proposition. My total staff strength in the office is about 80 strong at the moment. And then we've got about...
For another, both these markets?
No, just for Malaysia alone.
Okay.
And we've got about 60 people actually on the consulting floor who deal with customers every day and speak to candidates. And in Singapore, we run about 100-man staff strength in comparison in terms of size. But the maturity of the market is very, very different between both places. Singapore has been a Asia-Pacific hub for well over two decades now. So the level of talent when you go out to market to headhunt, it's already there when you look for people within an Asia-Pacific capacity. What's changed in the Singapore market in the last 5 years is global roles sitting in Singapore, particularly with Asia companies growing. So if you look at China-based companies, which are the new big hiring giants, a lot of them debate whether to put their headquarters in Hong Kong, Singapore, or China. And Singapore is being picked for all sorts of reasons, either because of travel, proximity to the other countries in terms of having people come from the US or Europe, as well as to do with the fact that the language competency is very different.
Yep.
So then it's shifting from region to global. But if you look at the Malaysian market, I think the currency has been in Malaysia's favor for the last, I would say, decade, where more companies are seeing that if they base the talent out here, it's actually a very attractive value proposition, particularly in shared services environments and so on. And the literacy and education rate in Malaysia has gone up dramatically in the last decade. You see a lot more people leaving the country, being exposed to how things are done. At the same time, I think Malaysia is in a unique position where it maintains the best of its local values. It's still a Asian context. It's still subscribed to Asian values, but brings in the westernized way of doing things and looking at it. So a lot of companies find that actually Malaysia is a really good article or a position to have a headquarters base for Asia Pacific.
Right.
So you see this changing.
Okay, you're a lot more optimistic than I am, but okay.
Well, I've got an outside-in opinion, so I suppose it's different when you look at it from a fresh pair of eyes.
In terms of your recruiters and how do you go about training them? How do they get up to speed, I guess?
Recruiting is a very difficult skill to master.
Okay. You can't digitize it.
No, you couldn't. And we've tried to write manual after manual for this over the years. But no textbook or no training guide can teach you intuition, empathy, listening skills, and being able to be creative in finding a solution. At the end of the day, we're dealing with the two most volatile products. A client is a person and our product's a person, if you like to put it that way. So
the recruiter is a person.
Exactly. So anything that can go wrong will go wrong. It's Murphy's Law. When I see it every day when we recruit. I think what changes over time for our consulting floor is that the more problems they encounter, the wiser they get in learning how to deal with people's emotions and thought processes. And so you learn how to persuade, how to negotiate, how to find a win-win solution for both sides. And you learn to listen between the lines, particularly in Asian culture. We're not very vocal. We find it hard to say no. We don't always tell it like it is because we don't want to upset feelings. And sometimes I think being direct is not favored in our culture. Say compared to if this was done in the US, for example. So I think sometimes learning to read between the lines and culturally adapting to how we consult here is critical. And I think these are the sort of skill sets we pride ourselves on. It's about learning how to deal with people well at the end of the day.
All right. You have a tech and touch strategy. What's that?
So I talked about the fact that we are turning 60 this year. So what most people don't know about us is while we're governed by an executive board and a supervisory board, our founder is very much alive.
Okay.
So in my CEO's words, to quote him, we are the world's largest startup still.
Okay.
I bring this up because one of the reasons that kept me in the business or in the company for 12 years is I respect our values a lot. Our founder 6 years ago in 2013, came up and said some of the profits. 2013. Yeah, that's when we first started this. Came back and said that we were going to put some of the money that we get in profits back to the market. So we came up with what we call the Randstad Innovation Fund. This was to fund and seed startups, just like the way we were 60 years ago, to say that let's help companies realize their dream and become who they're going to become. And we did that for 2 years. So we had an investor relations team that went out and looked for companies. 2 years into it, when they were in San Francisco and Silicon Valley surveying one company, They did the trend analysis and they found that there was an exorbitant number of HR tech companies coming up. And the spike curve was like 550% growth compared to other industries. So we looked at it and said, what's going on here? And when we deep dived into it, what we found was there was a lot of innovation and technology that was happening in our industry. The tagline back then is that we're going to be disrupted and replaced. So we very quickly went, there's two things here. Either we disrupt ourselves and change, or some of these companies should be part of our portfolio and how we approach the market. We wanted to be ahead of the curve and set the trend. So we then started looking into HR tech companies. Now, for the next 2 years, we went through what I call an internal dilemma or conundrum, trying to decide if we are still a human resources company or we're a technology company at the pace in which we were acquiring technology. At that point, we realized that you cannot replace human beings with technology. In fact, you can enhance what human beings do through technology. And that's when our digital strategy was born, our tech and touch strategy was born, where we say at the core of who we are, we're still people. It's a people-based business, always will be. But what we are able to give to the market and the size and the volume and the scope or scale in which we can operate can be largely enhanced by what technology can do. And then we gave birth to our promise at the moment that we rely on, which is human forward. It doesn't make much grammatical sense when you put the two words together. But when you experience the brand promise of what it means, what we realize is that our concept is always going to be the same. It's about looking at the future of talent. That never, ever changes, whether you do it through technology or some of the means. All of those are a means to an end and enable people to do their jobs better.
Right. So your founder is still alive?
Oh, yes.
How old is he?
85 and kicking.
Oh, okay. Must be something in the air in Holland.
I've seen him once in person. And he passes off for a 65-year-old or a 70-year-old.
Okay.
He's energetic, passionate. When he talks about Randstad, you can still hear it in his voice.
And okay, so what he's done, though, you know, with this acquisition of companies and all that, and that was seemed like a completely different trajectory of the original business, you know.
Yes. He recognized very quickly, I would say probably 20 years into the company, that we needed to take a different direction. By 1990, we listed in the Euronext Stock Exchange. Now, the minute you list a company, it is a open I would say open declaration to tell people that I have decided to take a different step in the company and I'm allowing this to be governed as public property. So at that point already, we decided that we are not a company that is going to be based on what the founder wants, that we are going to be a company that is going to be seen as world class, as a top 100 brand, if you like. And that's always been our goalpost. So I think from that perspective, the acquisitions were the right things to do for the business.
Okay. Thanks for being with us and sharing some insights. As always, good to be finally meeting you. I've been speaking to Jaidas, Managing Director of Randstad Singapore and Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.